whatever works for you. You have plenty of time to watch these presentations and time to take these notes and really get into your most powerful mindset. And that is what I think is one of the most beautiful things. You know, it's not just the innovative strategies and the supportive community, but really being able to balance your time and step into the better version of who you are without feeling overwhelmed. That's key.
Welcome to A Step Forward, a podcast for ambitious VI specialists who are challenging the status quo. I'm Cassie Maloney, your new work bestie. With over 15 years of experience as an O&M specialist, author, professional development junkie, mom, and owner of Allied Independence, I have been through the ringer. And now I'm here to bring you a boost of inspiration, information, and our favorite, innovation, as we trade feeling overwhelmed for overjoyed while we create a significant impact in the lives of our learners and still lead more balanced, fulfilling lives. So grab your favorite beverage because we're about to take a step forward.
Welcome back to the podcast, my friend. I'm so glad that you are here. We just wrapped the TVI online symposium, and if I'm 100% honest with you, I wasn't sure how it was gonna go, but man, oh man, that was the smoothest conference we've ever put on. The agenda, the presenters were absolutely top notch, and I learned so much. It reminded me of, you know, being back in college and having that excitement for becoming a TVI and just getting to be in the room with everybody and getting to learn from all of you was absolutely phenomenal. One of the biggest things, honestly, that I love about our conferences is that we're not just here to give you ideas. I mean, like, giving you ideas is super great, but that's not our MO. Our MO is to help you to become a better teacher. And the best way that I found to do that is to create time after the conference to actually implement these ideas. But that means that we're going to have to overcome imposter syndrome. We're going to have to set time aside. We're going to have to review our notes. And we're going to have to dedicate ourselves to becoming a better person. And that is the hard part. The easy part is sitting down and watching these presentations. I know a lot of you guys were at home, all comfy cozy on your couches, your chairs. Some of you guys were at work. Some of you guys took half a day. Some of you popped in and out, whatever worked for you during that time. And we even had people at the weekend watch party. And I know a lot of you guys are watching the replays. Majority of people watch the replays. And all of that is super great. But now comes the hard part, and the hard part is actually doing it. So can we take some time and really dive into our star ideas? We provide a notebook on purpose, and whether you use that notebook or just, you know, you take notes somewhere else, the main goal is for you to have ideas. Even just one idea can change the trajectory of your teaching. So I'm going to share my top three takeaways, my star ideas, and how I plan on implementing them. And we'll also share some other bonus concepts that I really, really loved, but they're a little less tangible. They're more so concepts overall that I really enjoyed, and we can't really pull the audio from that. So number one, first and foremost, man, Robin Clark, girl, you just pop on a screen. I loved learning from you. Robin shared about a collapsed ECC framework. The expanded core curriculum, the ECC that we all know and love, has 9 areas. And if you've ever sat down to write out the 9 areas, like, so you're just giving yourself a pop quiz. For me, it's always been really hard. Like, there's one or two that I have to be like, oh, I'm gonna have to Google this, or have it written down somewhere else, or just like memorize it if I know I'm going into an interview or something of that nature. But she breaks it down into 3 areas. The 3 areas are access, and that covers compensatory, sensory efficiency, and assistive technology skills. Then independent living, which covers independent living skills, rec and leisure, and social interaction. And then community readiness, and that covers career education, orientation, and mobility and self-determination. I will let her get into that for you a little bit right now.
We've taken all 9 areas of the expanded core and we are putting it into 3 categories or sections. So we are collapsing, everybody seeing it from 9 disconnected areas, and we're bringing it in to 3 major categories. Those categories are access, independent living, and community readiness. Now, a few years ago, the legendary Karen Wolf, let us take a second of awe of how wonderful she is. She mentioned this to me as kind of an offhanded comment when we were discussing something about the expanded core, and it blew my brain wide open. So this concept is based on Karen Wolf. I want to make sure that proper credit is due there. And she's just allowed me to run everywhere with it. So three categories. This does not mean we are taking away all nine areas of the expanded core, but rather we're going to conjoin them so that they are more connected in how we approach this. So the first category are the access skills. These are compensatory access skills, sensory efficiency, and assistive technology. So now when I teach an access lesson, I am primarily focusing on skills from compensatory, sensory efficiency, and assistive technology. Now I'm using my resources to do this. I'm opening up to know what are the components of each of these things, because many people often think that compensatory skills are just Braille. There's so much more. Love Braille, but it's not the whole diva. There are so many other parts to compensatory learning that we are not digging in on. So these are the access lessons or the access areas. Next, independent living. These are the areas of independent living skills, recreation and leisure, and social interaction skills. Next, this isn't a term I use. It's called community readiness. I want to make sure I clarify with you. When I say community readiness, I don't just mean shopping at Target. That's not what it is. Our students belong to multiple communities. There is the actual physical community, but they also belong to their school community, their church community, their team community, their after-school communities, their family communities. So when I say community, I'm talking to you about the groups, the clusters that they belong to, and what can we do to get them ready for that? Career education, orientation and mobility, and self-determination. I want to lift up one critical thing for you. A lot of people get lost that career education is a lot about jobs and employment. That is a big part of it. But the real central role to career education is equipping students to fulfill the roles that they will live throughout their lives. Career education is so much more than getting a job. It is one important part, but the critical aspect of career education is helping students to fulfill the roles that they live in, that they will have in their lives. And of course, self-determination has an asterisk next to it. And that's because you can't teach self-determination in a bubble. It's not possible. You can't do that. It would be artificial. Self-determination is something that should be woven through everything that we do. I also want to lift up for you that a lot of people mistake self-determination and self-advocacy as the same thing. It's not. It's not. Advocacy is much different than what self-determination is. They are different parts of it. I also want to let you know that one critical and often overlooked part of self-determination are problem-solving skills. Problem-solving skills is a hallmark to 21st century instruction. Are we helping students with that process of becoming good problem solvers? And then I also want to say one other thing. Don't be black or white thinkers, friends. Just because orientation and mobility is in one category doesn't mean you can't do it in another. Case in point, I'm teaching students to do online grocery shopping because if anybody's still teaching students to get a personal shopper at a grocery store, it's kind of antiquated. Most stores don't have that option anymore. I'm not saying you can't, but I'm saying that's a practice we did a while ago. It really doesn't translate to today's world. Today's world, we're teaching students to order groceries online. Do you see how I'm using assistive technology? So I am embedding assistive technology in. The key points to this is that I am focusing on these areas as my critical parts. So my learning targets have to do with these points. The expanded core should always be connected. It was never meant to be taught in isolation. So when I hear somebody saying, oh, we're in a social skills class, maybe not. You can't teach these skills in fragmented parts. They were always designed to come together. All right. So I'm just going to answer a quick question I see here from Jill. She says, would you consider self-advocacy as part of the ECC, even though it's not a separate category? Actually, Jill, I'm going to blow your mind. One of the components of self-determination is advocacy skills. So it doesn't need its own area. It just means it's one of the components. I hope that that makes sense. Let me clarify with one more thing. Most teachers only see the expanded core at face value, meaning compensatory, social interaction, career education. You only see it there. I'm going to encourage you to go deeper because each of these nine areas actually have designated components, which say this is what makes up career education skills. That, my friends, is where you need to get dangerous. Stop looking at the expanded core at the surface only. There is so much more. It's like only looking at Hugh Jackman and going, wow, he's kind of handsome, but not going depth-wise to realize that he can sing, he can dance, he's a humanitarian, he's going through a hard divorce at this moment. There's so much more to Hugh Jackman other than he looks nice. So you need to take that approach when you see the expanded core.
On top of that, she also really held us to this standard of rigorous instruction that I think that we can all get back to if we've stepped away from it. She gave us this concept of birthday party lessons versus rigorous lessons and how, you know, you go to a birthday party and you have some fun, you do some activities and you leave and you feel all good and that's great, but what was the purpose of those activities? Like, what did you actually learn? And why are we actually doing those things? And rigor is still fun, like a birthday party, and you still get to leave feeling really good, but it also empowers the learners as to why we're doing this, why we're learning this. And for me, I have one particular student who has got to be gifted, talented, and he's working on cane skills. And man, cane skills are boring. They're so boring, especially for a kiddo like that. And sometimes it's really easy for me to just say like, oh, we're going to play this game and I'm going to keep you entertained for an hour or whatever. But what I've started doing once I started talking to Robin was explaining why we're doing this and why it's important and why he needs to actually pay attention. And what I've seen just in the past few weeks since I met Robin and we reviewed her presentation just through the walkthrough and now as I've gone through the symposium is my student is using his cane with one hand and understands why he can't just switch it back and forth. And he understands that, you know, the little bit of discomfort that he feels in his wrist because I'm asking him to use his cane in just one hand instead of, you know, switching it back and forth is for a purpose. And I think that he understands that it's really impactful and really powerful for him to use his cane correctly. Whereas before he was just like haphazardly switching it back and forth. Maybe it's in front of his body. Maybe it's behind his body. Maybe it's to the side. Didn't really matter. You know, why am I even really doing this? But this is a fun, cool game. I get to hit stuff with a stick and added the rigor to it. And it's actually really increased his cane skills. And I get to do the boring stuff. And the boring stuff in cane skills is what really matters. So that's ultimately what makes a huge, huge difference is the rigorous instruction. And she's really held us to that. And I love that about her. Number two, Conchita Hernandez, who I'm obsessed with. I cannot get enough with this woman. Okay, one of the main concepts that she talked about was that not everybody wants their kids to be independent. Like, what? Wait, what? Here I am preaching independence. I'm in the middle of Texas, y'all. I'm in the middle of Texas. No wonder I'm having such a hard time. I have students who are in their late teens sharing a bed with their parents. And I'm like, independence. Gosh, I just want to hit myself over the head with a book. Duh. Independence is not their jam. They don't want it. They don't want it for anybody. They're a kiddo with a visual impairment. They are codependent, interdependent people. And here my little white self goes into the independence. We need your kid to be independent. The parent's like, no. No. Like, it's not happening. No wonder we're having a hard time. No wonder. And her whole thing was all about, you know, sitting in the seat of the parents. Why are we telling parents to be at a meeting at 11 when it starts at 11. I grew up in South Florida. I got Cuban time in my blood. And yet we shame parents for following their own cultural norms and not the Anglo cultural norms. Like, why? Why can't we just be more culturally responsive? So listen to Conchita share about the school perspective versus the parent perspective. And I hope that this can give you some ideas as to how you can step more into being culturally responsive and offering more of the parent perspective without the shame of being who they are.
First, we're going to take a look at the school perspective, and then we're going to take a look at the family perspective, right? So from school perspective, in doing research and surveys and a lot of different stuff with parents, parents are not engaged in IEP meetings. And so schools feel that, you know, even if we do provide an interpreter, they don't say anything the whole meeting, right? They don't really know what's happening or what's going on. Paperwork not being turned in on time is a really big one. Poor communication, right? Either there is an interpreter and we have to figure that out. That fluidness doesn't exist, right? Once you have to go through an interpreter, you've lost the meaning. And a lot of times I say in English, every language has a lot of idioms and a lot of ways of saying things that just don't translate over. And we use them a lot without realizing it. Just even saying, I ran over here. There's no such thing as that in Spanish. Or I'm really tired. Or in Spanish, we would never say I love to anything that's other than a person. Like, it's very odd to us that in English, it's like, I love a book or I love a movie. Like, it's very odd. And so language, even when it's being translated, there's no 100% accurate way of translating a language. You have to get approximate. So you do lose information. Educators feel a lack of training on how to work with this population. So this is a big one. And from families, so their perspective on what are some of the barriers that are influencing this? So families feel that schools are only communicating negative student behaviors. So they only receive feedback when it's either time to attend an IEP meeting or your son did something wrong. Like, they're kept out of the loop with school activities, with after school activities, with festivals, with, you know, Spirit Week, with everything else. Interpreters are not always provided. And if they are, we've all had a horrible interpreter that you're like, that I know that's not correctly being interpreted. That is not what was happening. And then families, this is a really big one. Families feel lucky to receive services, but don't understand what is being provided. I myself was an English learner in public schools, and my parents were like, oh, we're so lucky, right? Like, they're giving us this type of service. Special education doesn't exist in 90% of the world. And so when parents come here, they're like, oh, we're so grateful. And so they don't understand that, no, it's actually the law. Like, the school isn't being nice to you. They're not being welcoming to you. It's the law. This is something that should be provided. Feelings of exclusion, not being a part of the school community. So they may be receiving stuff in Spanish, but they don't feel like their cultural background matters in the school, or their language matters in the school, or the input that they have on their children's lives. And they don't feel like equal IEP team participants. Parents have, on an average, a sixth grade reading level. And a lot of our migrant, depending on the wave of migrations that come, parents don't have high school diplomas. And so when we show up to IEP meetings, and there's all these providers around the table that are talking about all these complex things, it's very intimidating for families who show up and are like, well, how do I give my 2 cents when I don't even know what OT stands for. I don't even know what PT stands for. I don't even know what an IEP is. And so they feel like they don't know how to contribute because there's all these providers with fancy letters behind their names and stuff like that.
And the third star idea that I took from this conference is the importance of having an asset-based mindset when it comes to technology, from Belinda Ruttinger. I think so many times I feel like the tech train has left the station and I got there too late. And like, I tried for a long time to keep up with all the technology because I thought that's what was expected of me. And if you're going to be, you know, innovative, and if you're going to be a dedicated teacher, you have to know every single app that's coming out. And then at some point I was just like, no, I have Google Maps and I will choose one other one. Or I actually have like three really that I focus on in O&M. But ultimately, no, I'm not going to just keep pushing apps on my learners because it's confusing them. They can get everywhere they need to get with Google Maps, or now I'm using Apple Maps, then why? Why am I going to stress? So I just got so burnt out trying to chase every single thing. And there's no reason for that. And then I got down on myself and I had a little shame party, a little pity party, if you will. And that's not fun either. So listen to Belinda share about having an asset-based approach to technology and how we can help our learners with that.
You may come to this or come to other trainings not feeling like you know a lot about technology. And again, I'm right here with you. The more I learn, the more I realize how much there is to know. And so it just kind of keeps growing bigger and bigger. One thing I told a group of people recently, though, is if you can kind of flip it and reframe it to think about how lucky we are that so many options exist for our students and clients, and also that they keep continuing to be improved. I know it drives us all crazy when, you know, you sign on your computer and there's an update that's changed something, or you start your phone and there's been an update and it changes things and everything you knew, there's certain things that you have to relearn and everything like that. But if we can think of that as exciting and we can open ourselves up to trying different things and just embracing those changes, I think it goes a long way. So I really believe in having a growth mindset when it comes to technology. Wherever you're at today, that's your baseline, and you're going to learn more and more and more as you have the opportunity to work with different students on different areas of technology. In addition, you probably bring more to the table just because we're all using technology more than we ever did before in prior decades. You probably know more than you think you do. And a lot of the skills that have to do with being a good educator and teaching students or clients, they also cross over into technology. Part of why I focus on a growth mindset and on an asset-based approach when I talk about technology is because I don't know why technology seems to be kind of like math to me, where a lot of us seem to have these kind of hidden fears or hidden insecurities about our own performance. And it can be easy for those insecurities to be reinforced because, you know, you could pull up a big laundry list of keyboard commands on All About Jaws or about another screen reader. And it just reinforces, wow, there's so many. How am I ever going to know them all? But you don't necessarily have to know them all. So we're also going to be talking about how to be strategic in what you choose. And I always encourage people to focus on the students or clients that you're lucky enough to have on your caseload, because those students are your opportunity to identify what you're going to be focusing on, what you're going to learn. And it's just, you know, if you can jump in there with them and have enthusiasm, it helps you as an instructor, but it also helps your students.
Doesn't that just make so much more sense? You know, instead of shaming ourselves or feeling like we aren't great teachers because we don't know the technology, let's learn enough to be able to introduce it and then allow our learners to have the freedom and flexibility and autonomy to learn at their own pace what excites them. And we can take a little bit of a backseat. And that just circles back to what Robin said anyway. You and I didn't talk about this, but if you're at the symposium, you will know that she was talking about how we have very much of a teacher-centered approach to our lessons when we need to have a student-centered approach. We need to take a backseat to talking anyway. And it doesn't make us a bad teacher. Going, doing isn't what we need to be doing all the time. We need to be lifting them up and having them go through the experiences of researching and planning and understanding their own technology or understanding what they need to be doing. I'm also going to share just a few concepts and takeaways that I had, and we're not going to have the audio for these. For one, Birgit Phillips and Ilse, they shared what they're doing at Perkins with CVI, and it's mind-blowing. But it's also one of those, like, hashtag duh, I should have thought about this things, but like, you can't think about it unless you're researching. But it just makes so much sense. So they've stopped using the phases of CVI. And honestly, like, I loved when the phases came out, but I think it's very limited. And they put the nail on the head when they said that they're using a more comprehensive system than the phases, because the phases are numbered. And in order to assign a number to something scientifically, you have to norm it. And you can't norm CVI, at least at this point in our science, you know? And I really like their approach. They have 16 different content areas that they look at, and it feels much more 3D than the 2D phases. So I loved what they had to say. And then they also have a protocol that they shared about. I'm not a TVI But if you were TBI, having this protocol under your belt is going to really propel you forward and make things easier in the long run. I will say you're going to need to put time up front into filling out the protocol and filling out the evaluation aspect because it's longer. But once it's done, that learner is going to have so much more access to their education because everybody on the team is going to be able to understand what they need. And that's a really hard part in education. Also, I will say a few things about some other presentations. Liz Egan and Sylvia, your back and forth, hilarious. And making the idea of concepts related to crafting, so great. And I love how Liz has her students decide which teachers or who they want to give their crafts to. And Liz then uses those crafts and delivering those crafts to build her own professional relationship with those people. Like, I want a relationship with my superintendent, but I have no reason to talk to my superintendents. I have no reason to talk to even the principals most of the time, so I just don't. But if I can make a little craft, not me, my student can make a little craft. We could give it to the principal or the superintendent, then like, yeah, wouldn't that be adorable? That's a great way to have a relationship that's already embedded. And I can bring cookies, I can bring coffee, I can bring donuts or whatever, and that's all great. But having the learner make something and then it stays on the top of their mind, that feels really clutch. There were so many amazing, amazing presentations. It was really hard for me to narrow down just a few different things that I got from it and how I'm going to implement those. But I hope that this gives you a little bit of an understanding, even if you didn't get to go to the TVI symposium this year, of how much information is really packed into these days that we get to spend together and how much is actually filtered out. Everything that we learned about from, you know, APH and learning from Melissa and Lee to Joan Broadback and what you knew as a first year teacher. And man, that presentation, the chat was popping off because it wasn't just applicable to like first year teachers, but applicable to now and what everybody's going through. And everybody had questions and suggestions, and it was just such a great time. I mean, the whole thing was such a great time. I really appreciate everybody who brought their energy. We had almost a 50% show up rate for the first few presentations every day, and even 25% show up rate Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, which is 4 p.m. Pacific. So dinner and happy hour time on a Friday night, and that's what you chose to do with your time. And that right there just shows your absolute dedication. Even if you couldn't be there and you're joining the symposium or watching those presentations at your own time, maybe you're doing it right now, maybe this weekend over laundry or coffee, or maybe you get some friends together locally and you put it on a smart TV. Whatever works for you, you have plenty of time to watch these presentations and time to take these notes and really get into your most powerful mindset. And that is what I think is one of the most beautiful things. You know, it's not just the innovative strategies and the supportive community, but really being able to balance your time and step into the better version of who you are without feeling overwhelmed. That's key. We want you in this field and we want you to get better, and we want everybody with a visual impairment to be more independent. I'm still on the independence, even if that's not what the parents want. No, I'm just kidding. But it was absolutely wonderful. So I hope that you can take those little tidbits and help you take a step forward with that information. We will see you next week. We have Julia from Clarity. She's our Clarity coordinator. We will be talking about how she taps into her creativity next weekend. She is just so creative. My goodness. You'll definitely want to be there for that. All right, friend. I'll talk to you soon. Impactful VI specialists are changing the way that we do things. The old way is no longer acceptable, and we get to decide how we're going to make more impact without burning ourselves out. I'm so grateful that you've taken the time to listen to this podcast. I would love it if you would leave a review on Apple Podcasts, or if you even just came and hung out with us on social media. I'm at Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. You can find me at Allied Independence. I'd love to hear from you in my DMs. Let me know how you liked this episode and anything that you took away from it. Until next week, just remember that all you have to do is take a step forward.